We continue to prepare for the big one in our part of the world. A big earthquake is expected sometime in the next several decades. Note how squishy we are on the timing. Along the Cascadia subduction zone, tectonic plates bump into each other and rise and fall along those edges. Cascadia could pack a wallop. Right now, let's focus on another fault out there on the ocean floor. The Blanco Transform Fault got a lot of scrutiny from scientists in recent years, and it provides some further information about how the Earth moves, including signs that little quakes can occur before big quakes. For that, we turn to John Nabilek, a professor of geology and geophysics at OSU. And if I've mispronounced your name, please correct me now.
No, that's correct. You got it right.
All right. I noticed that other people who've been covering this research, you published in January, being very careful to say that this does not necessarily mean any ability to predict big earthquakes. But what is the major takeaway that people should latch onto?
Well, what we were after was to understand how a fault is being loaded by the tectonic plates. And especially on Blanco Transform Fault, we have a earth crust and then also a mantle being involved in emotions. So what we were trying to see is how these two areas, the crust and the mantle, behave during the loading and between large earthquakes.
All right, so you got a few more signs about the ways in which the Earth moves, you're saying?
Yes, that's what we were really after. We wanted to see the coupling between the crust and mantle, and I think we succeeded in that.
So what for the folks who are still sort of scratching their heads over their high school geology, what is the difference between the crust and the mantle?
Well, the crust, it's composed of different material from the mantle. Mantle is pretty much olivine crystals, and it's pretty much the same everywhere around the globe. And then the crust, there is a variation in that. The continental crust is different from oceanic crust. And here we have a oceanic crust, which is only 6 kilometers, I guess about 4 miles thick. On the continent, we are talking 35 to 40 kilometers thickness. So it's quite different from the continents.
All right. But is that the case in oceans all across the world? That the
pretty much, yes. All the oceans, they have pretty thin crust, and all the continents have the thicker crust. Yes, and because of the thickness of the crust, it's lighter crust, and because of that, the continents kind of float on the top of the asthenosphere.
Okay, so that gets us to talk about various land forms that we've heard by name before. We all know the Cascadia subduction zone by name. Can you give us a refresher on why it exists?
Well, the subduction zone per se exists because actually we have a Juan de Fuca plate. It's a small plate just next to the Pacific plate, which is subducting under Oregon and Northern California, and it produces the beautiful Cascade volcanoes. But it's also very dangerous in terms of potentially producing very large earthquakes, as other subduction zones do.
As somebody's explained to us.
On the other hand, you know, the Blanco Transform Fault, it joins the two ridges. One is the Juan de Fuca Ridge, and the other one is the Gorda Ridge. And these ridges, they produce new crust. And Blanco joins these two, and it has a horizontal motion, kind of like San Andreas, and it reflects the motion between Juan de Fuca plate and Pacific plate.
So when you talk about a horizontal motion, so instead of thrusting upward, they're just sort of sliding next to
each
other?
Exactly. It's like San Andreas. You know, plates are going side by side. And in this case, it's about 5 centimeters per year, so about 2 inches per year.
And so is there, then help us understand the relationship then between the Blanco transform fault and the Cascadia subduction zone.
Well, the fault is about 70 miles away or kilometers away from the subduction zone. And that's the eastern end of it. The western end is about 200 miles to the northwest. And the fault, as I said, is about 200 miles long. It moves at about 5 centimeters per year. And so it's quite fast. And it produces a large number of earthquakes, especially in comparison to San Andreas. So we actually go there to look how strike slip faults, how transform faults behave.
John Nabilek, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's from Oregon State University, a professor of geology and geophysics, and we're talking about the Blanco transform fault out there in the ocean and what we can learn from it. There's a lot of scrutiny going on, and they published some research just last month about it. You can join the conversation on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. So let's dive a little further into the research you just published recently, because you got very serious about monitoring the Blanco transform fault. What kinds of equipment did you put out there?
Well, we were quite lucky. We were able to obtain 55 ocean bottom seismometers. These are seismometers that are dropped from a vessel, it's a research vessel, down to the bottom of the ocean. And we surrounded the whole Blanco transform fault with these instruments. And these days, they can sit down there for as long as a year, and then they come up back to the surface when we pick them up and we get the data. In the past, we didn't have as many of these instruments, and they couldn't stay as long on the ocean bottom. And so this is basically a second experiment like this on a transform fault in the deep ocean. And it's really just enabled by the number of instruments and also the long, at least 1 year of deployment.
Now, obviously,
so we can study the whole cycles of earthquakes.
So you certainly had some suspicions about what kind of data you would get when you pulled the seismometers back in. I assume there's no telemetry, so over the course of that year, you just don't know what they're picking up.
Oh, exactly. It's we are just always just waiting and hoping for the best.
So it's kind of like opening a Christmas present when you bring all these seismometers back up again. What did you get from them, and how did that compare with your expectations for the readings you'd get?
Well, we were already there are many seismometers on the coast or along the coast, and we had experiments before where we monitored the Blanco transform fault from land, which kind of restricted us, the monitoring, only to large earthquakes, in this case about magnitude 3.5 or 4. And so when we went and put seismometer directly on the fault, we can find earthquakes down to about magnitude 2 and less. So it really enabled us to look at these minor differences in the behavior of the crust and the mantle, which we suspected these differences, but we couldn't prove. So with this data, we have a kind of a proof how these two, the crust and mantle.
So John, is there an aha or a see I told you so out of the data you picked up?
Well, in some sense, yes, because we have seen what we observe is that the crust essentially doesn't move between large earthquakes. So it just sits there absorbs strain of the from the plate motions and then ruptures in large earthquakes. On the other hand, the mantle, it behaves in kind of a strange way. It creeps. It moves very slowly, at basically at a rate of 5 centimeters per year. That's the deep mantle. And then the upper mantle is in between. It creeps, and at the same time it produces these very tiny earthquakes, which we were able to record. They are distinctly different from the earthquakes that you usually have in the crust, in the sense that they are tiny and they occur in what we call seismic swarms. It means that they start moving as they produce basically very small earthquakes over a relatively small time frame, let's say about 1 hour. You will get like 10, 15 earthquakes, one after another, and then they stop. And then they come on again in maybe 2 weeks or so. So it's a kind of a process that is different from on the crust, where usually you have a big shock, and then what we have is aftershocks, which are smaller. These events are all about the same. They are small and all about the same. And this type of behavior has been already observed at other places, and it's usually related to creep on the fault in the mantle. That means that the mantle produces this very slow motion, kind of on a scale of hours or weeks even. And as it moves, it produces also these tiny little earthquakes. And so that's what we have discovered, is these tiny earthquakes. And we also discovered that the crust pretty much behaves as we would expect.
But the mantle, not so much, and they do move differently.
Yes, very much so. Yeah.
So, what do we learn from the tiny earthquakes? Are they have any usefulness to us as something like a harbinger of bigger earthquakes or anything like that?
Well, in some sense, yes, because they seem to occur before large earthquakes, and we actually saw during our deployment we had a magnitude 5 earthquake that occurred there. And there were several small events like that right before it. On the other hand, we have many series of these little earthquakes that occur there without producing a large earthquake. So what we see is that little earthquakes and the silent slip that you get before, it keeps loading the crust, but it's not always that the crust is not always going to rupture. It's going to rupture only if there is already enough strain accumulated. But once it accumulates enough strain, then a sequence like this of a small slow creep and these small earthquakes can actually trigger the slip in the crust. So it's not unique. We need to study this behavior better and maybe look for some other discrimination, other parameters that can discriminate these, but at least we know that it's these small earthquakes, and which kind of repeat over months periods, that are related to triggering of the larger events.
So, does this change anything in the bigger picture for the folks on land about our thinking about this, the size or the period of a major event, for example, on the Cascadia subduction zone?
Yes, well, not that much, but we can take analogy to the subduction zone. In a subduction zone, we also see these slow events, slow creep. This is you can see it in the GPS instruments. They record deformation and the motion of the plates on the coast, and these record these slow motions, which take sometimes a week or even a month, and quite often they are associated with tremor. That's a high frequency noise that seems to come up from beneath the, in the earth, and it lasts over several weeks, and it seems to be tied to this slow motion at depth. And so we also think that probably in the Cascadia subduction zone, if the large one is going to come, it would come probably, it would be preceded with some kind of a slow slip and tremor in this case.
All right, so there would be some sort of activity and maybe one of these little seismic swarms in the, before something big were to happen.
Yes, mm-hmm. But again, similarly to Blanco, these things occur several times per year, and so it's not a unique prediction that you can make, but it definitely helps to constrain things, at least to those periods when we have this unusual motions.
I guess a big takeaway for those of us who are not geophysicists is to realize that not only does the Earth move constantly, but in many different ways.
Yes, yes. And really, you know, this is something that we have learned only quite recently, maybe the last 20 years or so, when GPS became so robust that we can see motions down to millimeters of motion on the surface of the Earth.
This is how you can measure things.
We can measure this type of behavior mm-hmm. that we didn't, we were not able to do before. Before, we kind of just assumed that the creep, you know, this slow motion is pretty much constant. But now we see that actually that slow motion comes in episodes, pretty long separated episodes.
All right, a bunch of events going on all the time out there, and on not a regular basis. The research is titled Mode of Slip and Crust Mantle Interaction at Oceanic Transform Faults. They've been looking at the Blanco Transform Fault at Oregon State University and other institutions. John Nabilek is a professor of geology and geophysics at OSU, one of the researchers. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.